Washington, D.C. This is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
This is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
Now showing on AeroCinema.com.
Deep in the mountainous regions of southern Germany, there lies a secret. Behind armed guards and solid walls, aviation genius Willy Messerschmitt has a team toiling away at something deadly, something the world has never seen before. The Messerschmitt name is already synonymous with the most feared aircraft of the war. Whether propeller or jet-powered, they are a driving force for the Luftwaffe. Now, with enemy forces closing in, the mystery must be hidden before it is too late. Plans divvied up, designs buried deep. No one can know what is behind the doors of the secret factory.
Hey folks, it's Ryan Keough from Warbird Information Exchange. Join us every Wednesday evening here on Warbird Radio for Wix Warbird Weekly Live, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, with rebroadcasts throughout the week. You've been on the Wix Internet Forum, one of the world's best for Internet Warbird discussion. Now we're coming to you live and on the air. Tune in, take off to discuss the hot topics in Warbirds around the world this week, along with our guests who are working hard to keep them flying well into the future. Call in, write in, or even Skype in to add your voice to the conversation. Wix wants to hear from you. Again, that's Wix Warbird Weekly Live, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only here on Warbird Radio.
Broadcasting loud and proud from the heart of the nation's capital, this is Warbird Radio.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio. It is Wednesday, November 10th, 2010, and we are here with you live on Warbird Radio. Like I just said, talking and chatting Warbirds like we do every single week here, chatting about the newest things that are going on the Wix Warbird Forum online at warbirdinformationexchange.org, and also about just about any other topics that anybody else has interest in about Warbirds that's going on this week. You can give us a call here at the studio. The studio line is 478-787-4768 if you want to talk and chat and just generally let's discuss some Warbirds. I'm here, like I am every week, with my buddy Zane Adams from the Fort Worth area. Zane, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Ryan, how are you?
Pretty good. And it's kind of interesting for the first time in a long time now, all of a sudden with the changeover of daylight savings time going away. Now I'm sitting here, in Phoenix, caught up to all the rest of the country, and I'm here in the dark. And you guys are in the dark, and boy, everybody's all in the dark this week.
Yeah, that's for sure. It is pitch black outside already. It really irritates me, but that's okay.
For those afternoon flyers, those people that were used to getting in their cars and driving home and, hopping back in their car and going out to the airport and, maybe putting in a couple of hours of flying and stuff. Unfortunately, those days are over unless you want to fly some nighttime VFR conditions. So, I feel for you. it's been an interesting week here with the change in seasons. A lot of things have been changing around in Warbirds. Some kind of strange happenings, I guess, happening more than anything else, and not necessarily Warbird related. But there's this entire gerflafel about about a supposed missile that was launched off the coast of California that now people are saying might be a jet contrail and such. I'm thinking somebody got out there and got their hands on an ME-163. That's what I'm thinking. And maybe got the thing going and roared it up or something like that.
Yeah, it's a short ride to the stratosphere.
probably a lot more comfortable than the other one that had the rockets in the nose. I can never remember the name of the darn thing. Made out of plywood. National Air and Space Museum has it. Gosh, my mind went blank, but anyways.
I know what you're talking about. I don't remember what it is either, but yeah. It's just amazing how freaked out people are about something they see in the sky that they don't understand. And, you know, it just, I don't know, it drives me crazy because I think it's just a contrail, you know, and there's all kinds of weird ways you can look at things.
Mm-hmm.
That is true. See them differently. And if, you know, an airplane's coming at you over the horizon and the Earth's turning away, and there's just all kinds of ways to look at it. It looks to me like a contrail, but.
Oh, yeah. And I've seen contrails before, too, that are kind of like that. In fact, I saw one on my way to work today, but I know late in the evening, get that kind of low look. And sometimes the atmosphere just creates this kind of like a magnifying glass look and stuff, especially over there. And, well, everything's kind of magnified over in California, so never.
Anyway. Yeah, whether on purpose or not, yeah.
Yeah, anyways. So that being said, you know, if you've got any theories, if anybody out there has got any theories on what this might be, or if you know of anybody who's been toying around with, a V1 that they're restoring or anything like that, give us a call here again, 478-787-4768. We'll get you into into talk to Zane and I this afternoon, or this evening, I should say. And we're going to have in a little bit, we're going to have another trivia question for you this evening, giving away another free T-shirt from Warbirdwear.com. Chris Soltis, one of the Warbird Information Exchange members, has been kind enough to provide us with yet another brain teaser that we'll be giving you a little bit, so stay tuned for that. But going into Warbird news, things that kind of went on this week, we had a bit of from what it's perceived at this point, might be a little bit of a close call that we had this week. Got a little bit more information on that, Zane?
Well, just it was a hot thread on the topic on the forum today. There was a video posted by an air show goer on YouTube, and this was posted from the Lackland Air Force Base air show in open house last weekend. And it looks like on the video, it looks like there was a close call between the Lone Star Flight Museum's B-17 and Corsair. They were both doing their circuits and coming at each other kind of from different angles. And it looks like, it's what it looks like on the video, that the Corsair pulled up hard and fast, pull hard enough to, have wingtip vortices off those round wings out there, and to miss the airplane. He pitched up and then continued on. But it was kind of a scary piece of video, and there's been some talk on the forum about it for sure. And it's just got to be careful out there for sure.
Oh, absolutely. When you're looking at airplanes that are kind of dissimilar, I mean, you got to say a fighter and a bomber display dissimilar formation, two airplanes that have two different speed envelopes. You've got to be cautious with something like that. But, you know, like we always say too, I mean, this is only initial speculation. We're not the NTSB, obviously, and we're not pointing fingers at anything on this case. But, certainly it's something that we all have to be very, very cautious of. So.
Sure. Oh yeah. It is. And it's, of course, it's video and it's taken from one angle, and but it is quite the buzz out there on a few forums, and of course, you know, it's on YouTube, so it lasts forever and everybody gets to see it. But mm-hmm. I hope it doesn't look like what it looked like, but I'm glad that it was a disaster averted. Looks like the Corsair pilot was pretty sharp and got out of the way. So those guys putting on air shows got to be careful, and I think about those guys every time they go up, that you gotta, these guys are doing dangerous things up there, as safe as we try to make it. But so give your air show pilot a hug when you see them next time. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of safety, even the most innocuous kind of things, just the takeoff and landing sequence and stuff, and aircraft that are relatively, relatively safe. I mean, when it comes right down, I mean, all airplanes themselves are safe, and especially the World War II airplanes. They're built, very, very well. They're built to sustain some pretty significant, damage and that kind of thing. But I mean, even, in the cautious parts of flight, takeoff and landing, you can have something go wrong, and it can go wrong pretty quickly. I'd like to actually, give my respect this past week. I heard of the passing of one of my friends and that flew a T-6, actually an SNJ, out of the Massachusetts area. He unfortunately had an incident where had an engine, a problem on land, or I believe it was on takeoff, ended up flipping it over into the Nashua River in Fitchburg, Massachusetts. His passenger was okay, but he unfortunately passed away. I have to basically give a little bit of a tribute out to Reese Dill, who is a good friend of the Warbird community in the Massachusetts area, and must say my respects for his family this past week. But
apparently I never met Reese, but I've heard of him, and there's the people that knew him are touched, and yeah, apparently he was a great guy, and put himself out there to fly a lot of people around, and it's sad part of this business we're in, I guess. They got to be careful.
That is true.
Every second counts. So.
Yeah, that is true. But I always have to say it. I mean, because we always end up having this kind of issue that comes up on the forum, and I think this happens sometimes. And when you get into public settings, is the idea of speculation. The people think that they're the experts on certain things, and may have an idea that's completely off base. And when something like this happens, there are trained professionals out there that will go out and they will be part of the investigation of something like this. And there's no sense in sitting there and thinking that it's pilot error or speculating one way or the other when you don't know the full circumstances of it. So if you're a Wix member and listening and such, keep that in mind the next time something like this comes up, and just be respectful of the family, be respectful of the investigators, and be respectful of the legacy of the person who was affected by the whatever incident out there, and keep keep your comments to yourself until the actual final judgment is put down at some point by the NTSB or whomever is investigating it at the time. So
yeah, there was a thread that came up this week after that Reese's incident that people, somebody was asking on the forum, and I know we got a lot of forum members listening, but what is the rules, and I know on Wix we don't necessarily have a rule against accident reporting. We just ask that you are respectful, that you're understanding, that you're not sensationalize what's going on, and just the facts is all we need to know. And the causes and reasons will come out. The NTSB does a really good job on figuring out what happens with these aircraft, with aircraft incidents all over the world. So, we just need to be conscious of, in our little Warbird circle for sure, conscious of the personalities, the people involved, the families and the close friends and this close-knit, group of people in the Warbird community, the airshow community. A lot of people know it's kind of like a small town,
yeah,
spread all over the country. There's a lot of people know a lot of people, and just that's all we ask. And Ryan, you're right, is just be respectful and understanding, and wild speculation. I know it's the forums is a big hangar talk, but doing some hangar flying, but just keep it respectful in the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that I guess out of all of this, whenever there's an incident, be it an incident where there's damage, or it could be just a close call, like we may have seen this past week. The good thing that comes out about all this stuff is traditionally there is something found out where we learn by it. We always learn by our mistakes. There's a reason that these things happen, and we can improve our own safety by learning from the mistakes of what happened to the, in that incident. It may be, formation qualifications. It might be pilot training. How long did it take for people to, understand, especially, post-World War II. P-51s were coming out in the civilian market, and understanding the low-speed, high-torque characteristics of a go-around on landing of a P-51, and how that has traditionally contributed to a lot of issues with P-51s going in and during the landing sequence. So it certainly helps to engage us and get us thinking about how to make warbirds and how to make our operations more and more safe going along too. So certainly it's one of the silver linings and hopefully the legacy of some of the folks that have lost their lives in warbirds, but certainly we know that it helps at least the organization and the industry itself and the community move on and continue to keep these airplanes flying for many, many more years. So
as long as we learn from it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now the other sad news. I mean, I hate to make it a tough week, but boy, you can't go on without talking about. You can't go into warbird discussion at all without at least noting the passing of noted warbird collector and actually probably one of the resources for many of the restorations that have come out in the last couple of years of some pretty significant airplanes, Walter Suplata of Ohio. Though he wasn't a pilot, a recent warbird pilot himself, the airplanes that he had stored in his backyard basically have pretty much been some of the most unique restorations coming out. The Odegaard Corsair, race Corsairs, F2Gs that have come out were part of what he saved. The B-25 that is flying in the hands of Jerry Yagan and at the Fighter Factory was a part of his collection as well. I believe that the P-82 Twin Mustang that Tom Riley is currently restoring was also one of his aircraft, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Is that correct?
I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
He may have another one there. I don't know if he's still. Wasn't there another P-6 there? P-80 or F-82? Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Fuselage stored in the B-36 fuselage. So
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. There may be another one there. Yeah, it is sad to hear his passing. He was an older gentleman, had been around a long, long time, and he did save some airframes that were all but going to the scrap heap.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that more restorations can come out of that collection, and more museum pieces for sure. I think will come out of there. I hope some more flying restorations come out of there as well. There's some real unique aircraft there. I don't think we'll ever see the B-36 up in the air.
Yeah,
I think that magnesium held up real good on the outside. But,
yeah, that's true. That is true.
It is cool to see that he's, the airplanes that are there, it's interesting for sure.
Yeah, and certainly, I guess the legacy of his was he wanted to find a way to make sure and save them, and save them he did. I mean, he certainly did not come off as a man that had much money to speak of per se. Liked the airplanes a lot, found the right opportunities, and luckily living so close to some pretty significant areas of post Cleveland air races, obviously, and the proximity of Goodyear and Akron, and some of the aircraft that came out of that facility for a long time. He was fortunate enough to get a lot of stuff, so it's certainly it certainly is interesting. And I guess one of the big questions that everybody has in their mind is how is his how is his estate going to be handled at this point? As we've heard from our good friend Brad Pilgrim, who had to work with the estate of our good friend Gary Austin, it's not an easy process, and especially when you've got stuff scattered all around such a large place like his front yard. It'll be interesting to see what's uncovered, and let's just hope that that the folks that are handling his estate don't go in with a scrapper's mentality, and they go in more with a collector's mentality and know really what the treasure is that they've got back there.
And even then, there's a danger, some of that stuff is going to be expensive to move.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to move it and have that restoration mentality there, and it's going to be difficult to pay for somebody. Somebody's got to come up with some money to move that stuff out of there and to do it right. And I know Brad laments, you know, some of the stuff that he basically scrapped and threw away down there at Gary's place because people wouldn't come and get it, don't want it. You know, if you offered him a dollar for a, you know, a 33.50 carcass, he'd take it. You know, mm-hmm. He'd take anything he could, but there just wasn't that many takers. So it's you know, I hope that people step up and take care of some of this stuff out there at Walter's place.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, there's going to be a lot of stuff that, you know, it's going to be unavoidable. You know, it's either corroded beyond repair or, you know, and with all that, I mean, I think one of the things to also quash is the general discourse that people are going to have out there and say, well, they shouldn't have done that, or they shouldn't have thrown it away and stuff. You know, it's really where the rubber meets the road mentality. I mean, if you're going to put up the money, if you've got it, yeah, you can go out and save it. You know, but don't criticize those who have to make the tough decisions in the end because of the fact that, you know, there's a core for an 1820 that's sitting out there that there's no way that it could be used in any other way unless you want to make a big old boat anchor out of it. You know, it's there's only so much you can do. And I think that there's a lot of folks out there that I think get needlessly riled up over some of these things. You know, certainly, I mean, we wouldn't want to have something like a P-51 or P-38 pieces or anything like that go to waste, but some of the more, you know, mundane stuff that obviously is not going to have any use, you know, don't criticize the family for the decisions that they have to make on this, because it might be a hard one for them. So but that's a big deal that we've got going on, you know, and time will only tell as to see how that goes. So
well, the other big deal this week, the birdcage Corsair that was pulled out of Lake Michigan, and I guess at Waukegan Harbor, that was a World War II airplane that was crashed onto a deck of a training carrier during World War II, and was the pilot got out and they pushed it over the side, and they've got the tail and the rest of the fuselage and wings and everything up. It's remarkably intact. There's pictures all over the net of that. I know CBS News Chicago's got some video, and one of our guys, Dave, was there and took a bunch of pictures and posted them on Wix. But that's real exciting news to have that Corsair coming out. It's the only one left around, you know, of that vintage, of that age, and that model. So it's gonna, I guess, going to go to Pensacola, from what I understand, and be restored. And so.
Well, and I think it's a really good turning point, because I mean they've pulled out so many different FM2 airframes and you know the early model Wildcat airframes and stuff, having an early model Corsair pulled out, and I mean there weren't that many of these birdcage models. I mean we do know of some wrecks that were out, you know, more public wrecks that have been, you know, laying in state for many years because of the fact that the, you know, there's been some contention over war graves and that kind of thing. But this was a, honest to goodness, you know, birdcage Corsair that didn't have anything attached to it, and having something like this to be able to go into a museum for full restoration. And we know that, I mean, coming out of Lake Michigan, the quality of some of these airplanes that have been pulled out has been absolutely stunning sometimes because of the low oxygen environment and the fact that it's a cold lake period, and just from the fact that, you know, that the silt and such, you know, keeps them in good state. I mean, heck, there were Wildcats that were being pulled out with you know, air in the tires still and that kind of stuff. So you know, hopefully the restoration is going to, you know, be relatively easy, and that they're going to have the ability to keep it more or less in a you know, combat configuration and as authentic and original as possible to it too. Sure. So
I mean, this thing's still got the paint on it, blue paint and white side numbers, and you know, it's amazing. You know, it's not completely covered with zebra mussels. You know, it's in great shape for being underwater for 65 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that, I mean, and before I get going here, I'm going to say, please join the conversation here, folks, tonight. Again, give us a call, 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768. You're listening to us live. It's about 24 minutes after the hour here. If you're listening to us on the 10th of November, you're listening to us live. But we want to hear your your side of the story here on some of the topics we've covered this evening as well. But one of the things that makes me really, really excited about this, I mean, the Otay Reservoir aircraft that was recently pulled up, and of this, the technology and the actual recovery, the technology to find them in the first place, the technology that brings them up to the surface, and the technology that is used to preserve them post pulling out and getting them at least into a stabilized state for restoration has increased so much in the last, you know, even 10 years since they started pulling up the originals or the original Wildcats out of Lake Michigan and such too. This is really exciting news. I mean, when you look at this, because this might be the start of a trend. I mean, there's a lot of pieces still out there in Lake Michigan and in some of the other, you know, great lakes. And, you know, who knows? I mean, there's a B-29 sitting at the bottom of Lake Mead. There's a lot of potentials out there. I mean, granted, I'm not saying that every single one of these is a great potential, but, the more and more these kind of recoveries are done, the experts that are bringing these aircraft back to the surface can assist in the more challenging ones that we see across the country and across the world. I mean, think of the aircraft that they've had to pull out of various fjords and lakes and reservoirs overseas in Europe. Some of the German airframes and such, having the kind of technology and the know-how that these experts that are doing it here in the States are doing, certainly could save and bring some aircraft back to the surface that we haven't seen in literally 60, 70 years. At this point, so it's exciting stuff to say the least. And
there's some junkers and things coming out of the water in Europe that I'm pretty excited to see. The airframes that previously weren't existent, you know, and here they are coming out of the water. So pretty neat stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So again, give us a call, folks, 478-787-4768 to talk Warbirds with us here. We've got a trivia question tonight, Zane. My goodness, this is fortunate that we have these trivia questions every single week, cuz this gets us going a little bit here. Sure. But if you want to, we'll start this off, and the first caller that calls in this evening up for grabs is going to be it's a Chance Vought aircraft reproduction T-shirt from warbirdwear.com. It's going to be given away tonight, and you can see it right on warbirdwear.com if you want to go over and take a look at that shirt. It's a handsome shirt. Again, I've got one, and I wear it on a regular basis. Love it. If you answer the first caller that answers this question, and the question is as follows. Get your pens and papers out. It says, with only one original example of this aircraft surviving today at the London Science Museum, what World War I fighter ended up landing on English soil after the pilot became disoriented in a dense fog? I'll read it again. It's kind of long. But with only one original example of this aircraft surviving today at the London Science Museum, what World War I fighter ended up landing on English soil after the pilot became disoriented in a dense fog? And no, it wasn't Wrong Way Corrigan in his Curtis Robin.
So. Yeah, Curtis Robin was not a World War I fighter. So.
Exactly, exactly. Although it kind of looks like one if you look at it just the right light instead.
Those are so cool. It's one of my favorite vintage airplanes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Offense to the Waco guys out there.
But, that's true. Well, it's a different class. It's a monoplane, a high wing monoplane. It uses the same kind of configuration, but yeah, it's a little bit different. I guess it's more of for the people that like Fairchild 24s. That's the one that looks after it. So anyways,
sure.
So if you got the answer to tonight's question, give us a call, 478-787-4768, to give us a call over here and answer tonight's trivia question here on Wix Warbird Weekly Live. Before we go, one of the other things that I just found out today too, which I think, a lot of people may have skipped over, this is the the director of the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force, General Charles Metcalf, has announced that he's going to be retiring as director of the U.S. Air Force Museum and the Heritage Program as of December 31st, 2010. Under his leadership, there's been some controversy, but he's done pretty much one of the largest expansions of the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force, in obviously modern days under his reign. So very, very interesting to hear about that. We'd love to hear more people talking their thoughts about that, what might be the future of the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force and what directions they might take after his retirement. I was kind of surprised to see that today, and certainly his name has been floated around in Warbird circles for many, many years as well. So it'll be interesting to see. Lots of changes in Washington and some changes in Dayton now too. So
yeah, there's some he's done some good things with that museum, and there's I'll say it, he's made a lot of people mad out there. So the CAF's not real happy with him, I think, about their P-82, and there's some other guys out there trying to get a jet fighter for a Vietnam flight haven't been real happy with him as well. So, but on the other hand, he has done some wonderful things at that museum. That museum has blossomed and, doubled in size, getting airplanes out from outside, inside, undercover. He's done a great job on that. So, there's hot and cold, topics with the general there. So
absolutely. I mean, you gotta also say the last year, actually last couple of years, look at the fact that he was able to bring the Memphis Belle, one of the most important airframes in Air Force usage, back to the National Museum for restoration, and was able to work out a deal with the Smithsonian in order to be able to acquire the B-17D, the only one of its type or the early models, swoosh, and was able to get that placed in the hands, and through that entire deal was able to get a B-17 airframe for the 8th Air Force Museum in Savannah, Georgia. So, I mean, it's not just what happened in Dayton, but also some of the aircraft that have been able to grow into other museums that are part and connected to the U.S. Air Force Museum too. So, certainly it'll be an interesting transition. We'll see with that, and certainly I know some people are probably cheering for joy, and some are sitting and going,
uh-huh. Oh yeah.
We don't know, but we're going to take a quick break here, folks, and give you some time to give us a call back here. Again, when you get back, give us a call, 478-787-4768, to answer tonight's trivia quiz, or just to give us a call and let us know what's going on in your neck of the woods with Warbirds. You're listening again to Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
This is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson, host of the RC Scale Builder Show. If you're interested in radio-controlled scale models, join us every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern for our live show. We'll be covering the latest news in RC Scale and have some great interviews every week. That's every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. with rebroadcast throughout the week, the RC Scale Builder Show, here on Warbird Radio.
Now showing on AeroCinema.com.
Deep in the mountainous regions of southern Germany, there lies a secret. Behind armed guards and solid walls, aviation genius Willy Messerschmitt has a team toiling away on something deadly, something the world has never seen before. The Messerschmitt name is already synonymous with the most feared aircraft of the war. Whether propeller or jet-powered, they are a driving force for the Luftwaffe. Now, with enemy forces closing in, the mystery must be hidden before it is too late. Plans divvied up, designs buried deep. No one can know what is behind the doors of the The Secret Factory.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
We fooled you. We're back here at Warbird Weekly Live here at Wix Warbird Weekly Live here at Warbird Radio. Joining me as every week, Zane Adams, and I am, of course, Ryan Keough, and we're both calling to you from tonight, or we're coming to you tonight from Wix Central, Warbird Information Exchange.org, and coming to you here on WarbirdRadio.com. Boy, I got a little tongue-tied right up there. It must be the time switch. I'm not used to this this late night stuff. I feel like, anyways.
Time switch? You didn't have a time switch.
Oh, yes.
What are you talking about?
Well, all I get is the complaining of all you guys out there in non-time switch land. Being here in Arizona, I don't have to deal with all that stuff and, have to figure out how to reprogram the VCR or the DVD player or whatever you're using and stuff. We just sit there and go, oh, well, the rest of the world's doing their little thing. So
yeah, it was funny Monday morning, about 10:30. Everybody at work was going, I'm hungry. Let's go. It's time for lunch yet. It messes with your noggin.
It certainly. Well, it's kind of like you. It's kind of like you took a trip someplace to another time zone, but you never left. So some of us never leave. We're kind of like it's like the Hotel California. Once you come in, you never leave. So anyways. Well, I gotta brag about something a little bit, and I know that I know John Bronner said without pictures it's worthless, but the pictures are on my phone. I've just got to take them off, and I got to post them on Wix and whatever. But I got a chance this past weekend to get down to Casa Grande, Arizona, and see the PB4Y Privateer that came in. Yeah, and I was pretty darn impressed. I will say that much. Not only impressed with the airplane, but impressed with the airport. The folks at the airport were real nice. I just went up and had to provide seven copies of various identification forms in order to be able to get on the ramp, and had to go through a whole rigmarole on that, and had to be questioned by the CIA and stuff. And they finally let me out there for a little while, and they actually said, hey, go ahead, go take pictures. We're glad to have it here and stuff. And while I was out there taking photos of the bird, there was a Boy Scout explorer group that came out, and they were with their den. Boy Scouts probably better than I do, but they're
an explorer group. It's a crew.
So. It's a crew. Okay. Well, their entire crew came out, and their group leader knew a lot about the airplane. I mean, I was just sitting there listening to him, and I always like to listen, because I, being a former docent myself, from the old days of being with the National Warplane Museum, I always like to hear, people's spiels, and I don't correct them in person and stuff. I just like to see if there's any errors and stuff. And he was pretty much spot on, and I was pretty darn impressed. So I got to give kudos. If you're listening and you were part of that group that came out to Casa Grande on Saturday, he knows some stuff. So.
Cool.
But
you didn't get to hear it run or anything, did you?
No, I didn't. Oh, but okay. I did look. I mean, you are absolutely right. Is that thing has 2,600 QECs with the short stacks on them. So you're like, that's like two B-25s running at full power when that thing goes. And I mean, it's hard to even find a B-25 these days that doesn't have a collector ring that has the short stacks. Uh-huh. And I just can't wait to hear that thing and see that thing fly at some point, because that's got to be the loudest thing I've ever heard in my life. I mean, and just the size of those engines compared to the old 1830s on a B-24, I mean, it makes a big difference in that airplane. I was just really impressed with it overall. It certainly is a Warbird warrior, let's just say. I mean, it's done its time, and it looks like a pretty well used practical Warbird. Not very pretty. It's got the old 1970s supermarket style, you know, trim on the side of it, you know, with the orange and the yellow and stuff. But boy, it is, it's you can definitely see the parts of it that are B24 and the parts of it that are brand new and something completely different than the B24 when they built the PB4Y. So I was impressed. I was pretty happy with it. So.
Cool. Yeah, the only one I've ever been right up close to is the Lone Star Flight Museum's airplane down there in Galveston. And, you know, I've been through the hangar and seen it several times. I've seen, you know, like I said, I saw one in Albuquerque years ago from behind the fence across the runway and flying, you know, a couple of miles away. So yeah, I hadn't been that close to one. And it'd be cool to see flying. I'm really, really looking forward to, you know, Lone Star Flight Museum working through theirs, because they're doing it piece at a time and doing it right down there. Of course, I had, you know, that setback with the hurricane and everything, but they're cool airplanes for sure. And speaking of cool airplanes, I got to see and hear, speaking of hearing something, I got to hear and see Fifi fly today for the first time in years and years and years. She was at Meacham Field. She was at the Lackland Air Force Base last show last week. Came up to Meacham. They did a few squawks and took off for Long Beach this morning. And got to see her take off and fly and got a couple of photographs of her. And it was just a beautiful thing to see. Fortunately, I heard this afternoon they had a little squawk when they restarted. They flew to Midland for gas and had some sort of mechanical squawk. And they're working on that, should have it fixed in the morning and be headed to Long Beach in the morning. They didn't make Long Beach today, so
okay.
Keep your thoughts and prayers out there for the mechanics, for Dave and the crew to get her up and running. She's got, you know, she hadn't been flying in a long time, so she's got a little teething trouble, I think.
Yeah. Well, we can expect that. I mean, and certainly has had a pretty large amount of work done to her. You know, you could only imagine that, you know, movie stars probably have the same kind of issues when they come out of large amounts of cosmetic surgery, too. So, you know, it's...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's some teething pains there of some sort. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's true.
But man, she looked and sounded good today, taking off out of there, and got off the ground in a hurry. It's not the same airplane, so
really, you know. Yeah. So, I mean, from what you remember of the old days, the old dash number engines and stuff. I mean, is there a distinct different sound to it? Is there? I mean, obviously the performance is significantly better.
It didn't necessarily sound different to me. You know, like I said, it's been, you know, 10 years or more since I've seen her fly. But it didn't really sound different, but the takeoff roll was considerably shorter than I remember ever seeing that airplane do before, you know, and it just sounded good is all I can tell you, you know.
Oh, very well. I mean, I can't wait. I mean, I got another week to go, and they'll be out. The B-29 crew is going to be out here at Deer Valley after they get done with the Long Beach show, and they're going to be out here on next Sunday. I'll be there to visit them. So, if anybody is in the area listening to Wix tonight, or Wix Warbird Weekly Live, you know, come on out on Sunday. I'll be out there. I'll probably have you know, one of my many Wix T-shirts on, you know, I should be out there for the entire week. And the CAF Arizona wing is going to bring out their B-17 Sentimental Journey up there to the facility, and also their B-25 Made in the Shade, which is actually a relatively new airplane to the Warbird scene too. Just flew this past year and is an honest to God combat vet. Flew basically missions over Italy. I believe they flew 7 missions over Italy during World War II, and painted in accurate colors. So it'll be nice to actually have a big Warbird display out there again. And I'll be relocating my office up there for the week, I think. But
cool,
that'll be fun.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, but we still got the trivia question out there, folks. We're still looking for an answer. Give us a call if you know it. Give us a call at 478-787-4768. If you got the answer to this question again, it's with only one original example of this aircraft surviving today at the London Science Museum, what World War I fighter aircraft ended up landing on English soil after the pilot became disoriented in a dense fog?
Dense fog and in England.
Huh? A dense fog in England. Say it ain't so. It's kind of like 110 degree temperatures here in Arizona. But if you got the answer to the question, or if you just want to take a stab at it, give us a call here, 478-787-4768, here to get on Wix Warbird Weekly Live. And again, up for grabs is a beautiful Chance Vought aircraft reproduction t-shirt from warbirdwear.com, and you can see it at warbirdwear.com as well. So I've got it. It's a nice shirt, and amazingly enough, I think it actually repels oil. It's a white shirt and it repels oil, because I don't have any oil stains on my shirt. I don't know how it happened.
Really?
Yeah.
So that means you're not working hard enough.
That might be the reason why.
You gotta rub up against an old airplane.
Yeah. I guess I gotta
test there. Right?
That was one of the funny things is when I was down at Casa Grande with going to see the PB4Y, a good friend of mine, Carl Schultz. He's a great great photographer. He's just gotten into aviation art and aviation photography and stuff. And he was taking photos and stuff, wandering around the airplane. And he's like, it looks down at his shirt. He's like, oh, this thing's leaking. I said, no, really? It's a Warbird. So, he's like, is this supposed to happen? Yeah, it happens a lot, actually. If they aren't leaking, they're out of oil usually.
So, yeah, there you go. There you go.
But it was actually a very fun weekend. We went down to the Coolidge fly-in. Coolidge Airport is about 30 miles outside of town. It was a World War II training base. It was an AUX base, actually, for Willie or Williams Air Force Base, and also Falcon Field and a bunch of British airfields that we had around here. So it's a survivor from those old days and has become probably one of the coolest flying communities out there. It's got an active air tanker base on there. They fly C-130As out of that location. They do a lot of spraying with those and some odd cargo. But other than that, they have that and a vintage World War II hangar that's in great shape, and some other aircraft around there, and there's a great flying community out there. There are probably about 30 some odd aircraft out there. Full-size replica Spitfire was out there, which is a noted Arizona resident. Looked great. PT-22, a whole bunch of stuff. So I was pretty I was pretty impressed with it. So I think we're going to go down. They have it the first Saturday of every month during the non-hot months. So if folks are in the area, come on down to Coolidge. About the only way that you're going to be able to find the airport is if you fly in, because it is literally out in the middle of nowhere. So
out there. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's Arizona for you, right?
Well, yeah, pretty much.
And they're not hot months, so they're only open like December and January.
No. It usually goes from about October through May of every year. So, but it's a neat place, and it was lots of. There was a couple of T-6s that were down there. There's actually a couple of aircraft that are based right down there. There's a MiG-17 and a L-29 Delphin that are in a big Quonset hut hangar that's been built in recent years. And inside of it, it looks like a Russian air base. They've built the actual like hangar minium and back to look like the like an old Russian air base with the red star on the side of it and stuff. And I said I guess some people, not only it's not just Warbirds, but they've got a little extra time in their hands too.
Yeah, that's all right. That's a little fun to it. Sure.
Yeah. I didn't dare take a picture inside yet, because I know some of these people are very, very cautious with their hangar miniums. They don't want people knowing about it. So,
there you go.
Anyways, boy, Zane and I have been running. We had so many callers last week. I maybe we used up all of our credits this week, and nobody's giving us a call in here tonight. Again, we still got this trivia question out here, folks. 478-787-4768. If you want to give us a call and take a stab at the good old question.
There's bound to be somebody out there that knows the answer to this trivia question.
And honestly, I mean, it's a World War I fighter, and we're talking about a German aircraft too. So, I mean, there aren't very many to pick from. So you can probably take a good stab at it. So, again, 478-787-4768. And we're looking for what World War I fighter ended up landing on British soil after the pilot became disoriented in dense fog and is now surviving today at the London Science Museum. Heck, run over to the London Science Museum and see their website. Oh, we got a caller. Hey, there we go. Caller, go ahead. You're on Wix Warbird Weekly Live. Who's this?
This is David from good old Waukegan, Illinois. How are you guys?
Hey, David, my goodness, you're our savior tonight. Yeah. We haven't heard from you in a long time. How are you doing, sir?
I've been quite busy. Matter of fact, I was working, so I didn't get to listen to the first half of the show. And I thought I'd call in and say, did anybody talk birdcage corsair?
We did talk a little bit more about it. But if you've got some interesting information, I mean, you're right up there in the backyard. If you've got some interesting tidbits to add to it, please do so.
Well, I was very fortunate to go out there to the harbor and actually watch that airplane come up. And some of the pictures I posted on Wix, the airplane's just fascinating. I can't wait to see when it gets down to the museum and we see more pictures of the airplane cleaned up and the zebra mussels not all over it. I think it's just going to be an absolute fantastic time capsule and can't wait to see some more of it.
Oh, that'll be great. I mean, are they going to be keeping it up around the area for a little while they're doing the post-work and stuff? I mean, what are their immediate plans? Have you heard anything on that?
Hadn't heard, but I suspect just like the last one, pretty much that day or by the end of the second day, that airplane's disassembled and it's already on its way south. So
really?
Pretty safe to say that it's on its way to Pensacola, if not there already. I mean, those guys, what a crew. Met a few of them, met Terrace, and just the professionalism they do and getting the thing apart and package it safely and get it on down. And then, I'm not sure who it is, but every now and then there's a gentleman down there at the museum that posts the pictures of the airplanes like the Hellcat and the SBD when they were all cleaned up, and they're just fascinating. So I can't wait to see this one.
Yeah. Well, that I know that volunteer Owen Miller is the guy that normally posts the stuff up there, and we got to thank him and give a shout out to him for keeping us in the loop down there when it comes to the Naval Museum and all the stuff that's going on. So I'm sure he'll keep us apprised of that. How are things going with your collection up in your neck of the woods? Did the air show season go well for you guys? I'm guessing that you're probably getting close to wrapping that up at this point and getting the aircraft back in the shops?
Yep. Air show season was done for us. Oh, goodness. Oh, probably a good month and a half. We haven't done any now. So we just rolled the first airplane in for its annual. So winter maintenance season has begun. So it's going to get busy. It's going to get real busy. So, but we don't have near the projects that we had last year. We're not going to have to get as deep in the Skyraider. We're not going to have to get as deep as hopefully the F-86 engine doesn't give us any problems this year where we have to practice R&Ring the engine several times. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to a good year. Everybody's pretty optimistic that, things are going to go smoothly and we're not going to have log jams and run right up till, the opening day of Oshkosh to get an airplane finished. So we'd like to be done by May this year and reduce the stress level immensely. And it's not stress by the foundation. It's stress that, we put on ourselves. So just to try and meet for the founder and, have him keep a smile on his face and keep these airplanes flying. So
that's at least a good thing. I mean, you won't have to put so much effort into it, although your efforts were certainly, rewarded this past year. The amount of press that you guys got on especially the A4, seeing that flying at all the different various events, it certainly must have paid off this year. So I'm hoping that it was a good, successful year for you guys when you count up the numbers at the end of it all and such.
Yeah, I think, the A4, I tell you, highlight for us was having that at Oshkosh because that was its first air show since it became airworthy again. So it was kind of a homecoming, bring it back up to Oshkosh in front of the crowd where the airplane sat for almost 18 years and fly it, and for it to have performed as well as it did, because obviously the maintenance folks were still new to the airplane. We've got a lot to learn, and it cooperated quite well. We were able to fly all the photo missions that we did with it and then during the show and had a great time. Airplane came home. The Skyraider cooperated. So all in all, a great air show season and going to be a little more next year with the A4 because of the 100 years of naval aviation. We've already got a few shows booked, so it's going to keep us pretty busy. We're going to have to put together a truck and a trailer and crew to follow that airplane to some of the events, and there's some talk of quite possibly taking it to legacy training. If the Navy does it, we may. If it's out in California, doubtful that we'll take the A4 all the way there, but if they do something different, a little closer to home, then we may actually take the A4 and do the legacy training with it this year. So could be.
That's cool.
Some new things on the horizons for us, and hopefully for the people out there that really like the airplanes, get to see the A4 and up and close. And I don't want to say we're bored with any of the airplanes. They're just a blast, and for us to see them every day, kind of like to see from the folks out there at Wix, which ones do they want to see? Which ones do they want to see us bring to the air shows? Do they have any requests? So as we put together kind of our winter planning and our air show meetings, people check out our, Warbird Heritage Foundation on Facebook or our website and say, hey, we'd kind of like to see you at an air show like, here. Some of that does help, and we might actually come that way. So if we get some requests.
That's great. Now, are you guys planning on having a representative at ICAST, the International Council of Air Shows convention in December?
Yes. Yep. As far as I know, we've been out there the last 2 years, maybe 3 years. So I think our founder goes out there and knows a lot of people, kind of picks some of the shows. So everything's still hinging around how much the 100 years of the Navy aviation celebration. And so we're kind of holding back to see just how many commitments we're going to make there. We've committed to Thunder. We've committed to Oshkosh. So those are kind of back-to-back, opening weekend Thunder, and is, that following Monday or the very next Monday is Oshkosh. So we're going to be pretty busy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, luckily it's kind of the same area, luckily, so you don't have to go very far.
Relatively.
But,
we didn't have the lake still, right in the middle.
Yeah, that's true.
Pesky
lake. So, thank you very much for calling in, David, tonight, and thanks for the update on everything. Do you want to take a stab at our trivia question this evening and get yourself a Chance of Vought aircraft reproduction T-shirt?
Do you want to see how little I know about World War One? I think I'm going to have to pass.
Well, if that's the case,
I do want to say one more thing just on that Birdcage Corsair, and there's a lot of guys out there listening. Kudos to Chuck Greenhill. He's right here in my backyard at Kenosha for making it happen, putting the financial support, and like some of the posts on Wix, all the bashing of the Navy and the bashing of the Air Force and the museum. You know what? Like a post said out there, we need to think about thanking the Navy. There's been a turnaround. Certainly these are in my backyard. I've been fortunate to see two of them. I'd love to see some more. So, if they're listening or they see on Wix, a big thank you from those of us who are right here witnessing it. And when that thing is restored, it's just going to be spectacular.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more on that one. So, but I appreciate your call this evening, David, and hope we can get you sometime next week when you're not working on an airplane or playing around with your new iPad or anything like that. So.
Oh, you've been listening. Yeah.
I have been. Hell yeah. I see you when you're sleeping. I know when you're awake. So you'll have to give us a review on that.
We'll see if that iPad can get me down by Zane's Way next Friday. So.
All right, come on down.
I hear
Mooney, here we come.
Oh my goodness. Well, yeah, I'm curious. I'll have to talk to you a little bit about that too, because I'm looking at doing about the same thing. But we'll see. That'll be the practical gift giving season edition of Wix Warbird Weekly Live. We'll have to do in the next couple of weeks. So.
All right, we'll give you the consumer report in a couple of weeks. How's that?
Sounds good. All righty. Thank you very much, David. David calling again from the Wisconsin area, giving us an update on his Warbird activities, and very active member, and we thank him very much for calling in this evening. And with that, folks, I think we're going to call it a wrap this evening. We appreciate you tuning into us this evening, and we'll be back at it again next week as we are here every single Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Remember, set your clocks. for those of you that haven't done it yet, set your clocks, 8 p.m. Eastern, every Wednesday. Zane and I will be here. Thank you again to Matt Jolly from Warbird Radio for having us. And also thank you to our sponsors, AeroCinema.com, and also Zell Aircraft in Breckenridge, Texas. We'll talk to you again next week. Have a good night, Zane.
Good night, Ryan.
Take care. Bye, folks.